Good evening and welcome to Wanderings and Wool Gathering, episode 172. On tonight's episode, we will be reviewing the latest from Judas Priest that is called Invincible Shield. And we're going to talk about songs that either changed our lives, blew our minds, or maybe gave us a new direction in music that we didn't know about prior to hearing that music. So I'm really excited to see, hear what the guys have. If you like what you've seen here tonight, subscribe, leave a comment, and feel free to share it with your friends. And tonight's episode is sponsored by the Kokomo Lantern. You can head over to kokomolantern.substack.com and sign up for all of their content. A little change on the show tonight. The president of Wanderings and Wool Gathering decided that we needed a new metalhead on the show. So we've replaced Metalhead Monday with Kevy Metal. It's Kevin Raider Rodenbaugh. Here he is. Look, it's Kevy Metal right there. I don't know what happened. I don't know who Mr. Metalhead Monday angered, but must have been one of the higher ups because they gave you a call and you replaced him.
Yeah, well, I would say it's about time. Yeah.
He had it coming, didn't he?
He did. He sure did.
Who are we kidding? This show is nothing without the man himself, Metalhead Monday.
Step inside into his mind. It's boy band time. It's Metalhead Monday.
There he is.
Hey. Yeah, nice.
He wasn't really fired.
But let this be a warning.
Not sure that worked. Not sure that worked how it was supposed to, but it was interesting.
Were we supposed to keep you off longer?
No, I don't know. Maybe it was just on my end, but the song didn't come in until like the almost, it was almost over.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I heard it on my end.
Yeah, I heard it.
Okay.
A little laggy.
Just me. Right. Never mind. Moving on.
Well, anywho, Metalhead and I are excited to invite Mr. Kevin Raider Rodenbaugh to the show.
Always.
Excited to be here.
Before we get started, we just need you to plug away a little bit. What does Jack the Radio have going on, and when can we expect that record?
Well, let's see. We are finishing up tracking a new record right now. I think I'm going in to do some backing vocals on Wednesday and finishing up a few little odds and ends next weekend. And I believe it goes off to mastering. If all things go well, should be off to mastering by the beginning of April. And we're shooting for we're doing a release show on June 22nd here in Raleigh. So the records need to be back by then. Otherwise, we won't have anything to push. So that's what's going on. Yeah, fingers crossed. There's a brand new pressing plant right here in Raleigh called Poorhouse Records, and they are affiliated with Poorhouse Music Hall, which is a live venue, which is where we're doing our release party. I believe they told us, we just took a tour of the plant on Friday, and I believe they said they're one of either 34 or 35 in the U.S. So they're only two in North Carolina, including them. So we're really excited to get the work done locally and be able to drive there and pick up our records when they're done and all that. So.
Nice.
It's going to be fun.
That's awesome. That it seems like more and more record pressing facilities are popping up, even if they're small. I mean, that's great. That's awesome. Because I know, I mean, I've heard some crazy wait times for some people.
Yeah, yeah, it can be a really long time. I think our last record we did with Pirates Press, which I think is in Czech Republic, and that took. I think we waited 3 months on that one from the time that we approved the masters on that. So it takes a little while usually. Yeah.
Did you do any vocals on the last record?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. I can't think off the top of my head which songs, but several of the songs I did backing vocals. And then on this one, I think it's, there are two songs that I can remember that I do backing vocals on. And then There are group vocals on a few of the songs too that I'm involved in. So, yeah.
Okay. I didn't know in your history that you were a singer. So
I am. I am. Yes, yes, yes. I used to sing lead for a band in DC actually. So,
yeah. Nice. What was that band called?
That band was 60 Hertz Hum.
What is it?
60 Hertz Hum.
Like, is it hertz as in like gigahertz?
That's, yeah. But not gigahertz, hertz, because that's different.
60 Hertz Hum. A friend of mine lived in D.C. for 30 years, probably after we graduated, or 29, whatever years after we graduated college. Oh. And he is a huge music person, went to the local scene all the time. I wonder if he saw you guys.
Yeah, I doubt it.
I will ask. You never know. He went to a lot of stuff. He was he was in it to win it, and he's kept every ticket stub from every show he's ever seen.
He was like one of five in the audience.
Was there a tall guy there? That's him. All right. All right, gentlemen, are you ready to get rolling?
Yeah. I'm
ready.
All right. So we're going to start off.
Excited about this challenge.
Well, not that challenge. I'm talking about the Lester Bangs challenge.
I mean, I'm excited about that too.
And Jeremy cheats. He's got something down there where he punches in like AI really fast to give him the answer to all these.
It's all up here. It's all up here.
All right. So anyway, this is an older review. Actually, I think this is midstream. I think this one is not exactly when the record came out, but it's looking back at the record, but it's not like last year or something.
Got it.
Are you ready? Here we go. I'm going to give you the first part, and I'll give you the second part. Heartbeats, mad laughs, machines, and screams. Such are the opening moments of this record, ushering in a unique musical world where strange sounds, mellow music, bits of biting guitar, and this musician's cynical observations coexist in a disturbingly natural setting. Though it is one of the great musical achievements of the 20th century, its influence was of an indirect nature, save for Alan Parsons' project, a concept album where the concept was the music rather than a particular storyline.
Huh.
Any thoughts at that point?
I do. Who is this directed at?
Either one. Either.
Oh, Dark Side of the Moon.
That is correct. The one that was going to be the probable giveaway was that the album has remained on the Billboard chart 741 weeks.
Yeah.
Almost 15 years, which is an insane number.
Sorry to get that so quickly, but you know, as soon as you said the screams and machines, I was like, oh, well, that's Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah. Well, cool.
Well, that makes sense that you would have got that before me because I'm not a huge Pink Floyd guy. But I mean, if I feel eventually I probably would have got there. But yeah, I was not there yet.
Yeah.
That's fun. Where's the next one?
Do I have last week's written down? last week's was actually a Lester Bangs review from back in the day. So that was kind of fun. But anyway, good job. Those are always fun. I still don't get the Alan Parsons Project thing. The concept? I don't know. Anyway.
I mean, unless he's just made that reference to say something about the concept album. I don't know.
Yeah, being more music than story, possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's where it is. So, all right. Well, Mr. Mundy, let's get into the real challenge. And this is yours, so you explain it to everybody.
So I feel like I made this as difficult as I possibly could. I wanted songs that you have heard, you know, in your lifetime as you've listened to music and whatever, songs that you came across that just kind of blew your mind wide open, changed maybe how you listen to music or, you know, opened your eyes to a new genre or a new way of doing things or kind of, you know, totally turned a genre you loved on its head, just something along that line, something that just kind of blew your mind, opened your eyes and opened your world to new things.
Okay. Did that make sense, Kevin?
Makes sense to me. Yeah.
All right. Totally makes sense. So you're the guinea pig on the show. So you go first. What was one of yours that you came up with?
Just one. Yep. At the risk of sounding pretentious, this was the first one that came to mind. When I was maybe in junior high, I had seen the movie A Clockwork Orange. And I decided that I needed to be into Beethoven because that seemed cool. Okay. So I bought a cassette of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, which I liked just fine. But I feel like I kind of pretended to like it more than because I thought I was supposed to. But on the flip side of that was Schubert's Unfinished Symphony, which I fell in love with and made me kind of start listening to classical music in a different way and start enjoying it for real. And so I think that was probably the first thing that got me really digging into other classical musicians or classical composers.
So. Awesome. Right.
Okay. That's great. I'm going to piggyback on yours then, because it was going to be the second one I talked about, but I'm going to go with kind of like a grouping here of like Star Wars, Indiana Jones, anything done by Patrick Boyle. It was the big soundtracks and the scores for movies that were all big classical pieces. That's what got me to listen to like Wagner and, you know, things like that. So in the same way, I sought those out because I loved that particular piece of music. So it's not too far off. It's still inspired by movies. And I know exactly what you're talking about because I did listen to a little Ludwig von right after that came out because he said it and Alex was cool in the movie. So I went the same route as that, but I attached mine more to the like John Williams, Patrick Doyle. So there's mine.
Okay. See, that's interesting. One, you guys are old because I didn't see that when it came out. So, I actually didn't even think to go with movies or movie soundtracks. So there you go. That's interesting. I'm a young something. So the ones that I chose, I just kind of went in chronological order. For me, and the first one I went with was Billy Joel's Still Rock and Roll to Me, and that album came out in 1980, early 1980, so I would have been like 3 years old, but that is my earliest memory of really loving a song that was not like Sesame Street or, you know, some kind of, you know, silly nursery rhyme song or whatever. And I know my family, my dad had family in like Salem, Illinois. So we went down there to visit some people and some of his cousins were playing this song and I'm like 3 years old and I just like dancing uncontrollably to this song. And they thought it was the most hilarious thing ever. So they just played it like nonstop. And to this day, it's one of my favorite Billy Joel songs.
If I play it right now, we get up and dance?
No.
It would be hilarious, though.
It would, but no.
Dang it. All right, fine. Billy Joel. Yeah, I had that on cassette. That was a great one.
Mm-hmm. My dad, I remember the glass houses that my dad always had that cassette in his car when I was a kid.
Yeah, very cool. Good song. All right, Kevy Metal, what you got?
Oh, the next one. Okay, so I remember in high school, cruising around with my friends. My best friends were both one year and 2 years older than myself. And so they obviously had their driver's license before I did. And one of them had borrowed Dead Kennedy's Plastic Surgery Disasters. Nice. Tape. And we were cruising around listening to that, and we were sort of, we'd never heard anything like this before, right? I mean, if you think about when that came out, nothing sounded like the Dead Kennedys. Really, really nothing still sounds like the Dead Kennedys. But we were sort of driving around making fun of it. And then the more we listened to it, the more we, wow, you know, this drummer is actually incredible. And then you start listening to some of the guitar work. And once you get past the vocals and start being able to catch what he's saying, because he's singing so quickly a lot of times, you know, it became really interesting. And that that is what started my dive into punk rock. And then all through high school, I was a big, big punk rock guy. So, you know, on to Black Flag and Circle Jerks. And if I should want to see Circle Jerks, April 5th, Circle Jerks is going to be here. So,
Yeah. We were just last week, we did Al's new work, Al Jorgensen, and he had a little Jello Biafra on one of the songs with Ministry.
Yeah. I listened. That was cool. It was great. Yeah.
And actually, one of our, I don't know, participants, I guess, in audience participation, one of their albums that they chose was Plastic Surgery Disaster. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
Good choice. Okay. My number two is basically what set me on the road to what I liked. And that was in the late 70s. I had a lot of older neighbors and my brothers were older. So in the late 70s, I started getting introduced to Pink Floyd. I remember specifically going over to this guy's house. He had all his friends over and he had let all of us neighborhood kids come over and we would listen to The Wall. And then, of course, my brothers brought records all the time. So that introduced me to Rush. I can still remember the first time hearing Spirit of Radio. And so I think that's probably the moment that really set me on to like prog rock and, you know, Long Form and Loving Tool and bands like that. So I look back at that moment and that really, I think, set my musical taste for a long time.
That's awesome. That's, I mean, so far, this is exactly the kind of stuff that I was talking about. So
sweet. All right.
You're on it.
We did it.
So my second one, I went with one from Metallica. When that video came out, I was from the very beginning of MTV. I mean, I was young in 1981 when it started. I was like 5 years old, I think, 4 or 5 years old. But I watched it all the time because I just have always, music just, you know, got in there. So I was always all about music. And when the video for One dropped, and so the album came out in 1988, but the video didn't come out until January of 89. And I would have been 12 at that point. And this video just, I mean, I was listening to like Ozzy and Guns N' Roses, but and a lot of the hair bands and that kind of stuff. But I saw this video and I mean, I didn't know what was going on. So I was like, oh, I want this. So they would always, my parents would always get us like one or two cassettes to put in our stockings for Christmas. And so I got Injustice for All for Christmas. And it blew my mind so much that I didn't like it. I actually traded the cassette away to, I think, my oldest stepbrother at the time, and I came back around to it later. So, but I mean, I was all about One. I got the album and I was like, too much, and came back to it later. So that's always stuck in my head. I'll never forget that.
That video was super creepy. I mean, I mean, to be trapped in your body like that. Oh. And that song was just brutal. So I get where you're coming from. That was a lot.
I have the book that movie is based on. And I
Johnny's Got a Gun. So
yes,
called?
I think so. Yeah. I have not read it. I'm scared, but I hear it's a tough read. So
okay. I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting that you picked Metallica because I almost picked although that record, you know, one thing about that record was the influence that drumming had on a lot of drummers, right? Because because of that double bass section that's in there, it really brought that to the mainstream. There are other bands doing that, obviously, but that really brought it mainstream. And then all of a sudden, all these drummers were doing that fast bass drum stuff, and now the stuff that guys are doing make that look silly, you know, but in comparison. But you really have to give it to Lars for being an influence in that way. He really was. But the reason I say it's funny is because I almost picked Master of Puppets actually as one of mine, but I didn't because I had so many like you. And I don't know that changed the direction of what I was listening to so much as one that everybody probably has the same story to one extent or another. But when I was playing in my college band, we were already kind of a grunge band, and we were already playing some Nirvana from, so I think we were covering Mr. Mustache. But I was, you know, I knew Nirvana. I wasn't a big fan. I was more into Soundgarden and that kind of stuff. And so I kind of already started on that road, but we got a demo of Smells Like Teen Spirit. It had Smells Like Teen Spirit and then Jesus Christ Pose from Soundgarden on the same cassette. And
okay.
The singer for a band, I think, you know, Steve Janiak, I think, from Neurotic Box. He's like, come for a ride with me. You got to hear this. So he put in Jesus Christ Pose. I was like, wow, this is really good. He goes, wait till you hear this. And then he put on Smells Like Teen Spirit and could not believe it. That melody. I mean, now it's so overplayed, right? And we take it for granted. Right. But that melody was just so unique at the time. We drove around and I bet we listened to that song 6 times in a row. Just going crazy, like, what is this? You know, it was so great. Yeah. It was such a breath of fresh air, you know, for what was going on in the music industry at that point. So
that's cool too, because when I think of that, yes, of course, it's way over. I mean, the song is ubiquitous. It's everyone knows it. It's everywhere. It's been played into the ground. But yeah, when it came out, it was just so new and different. And you talk about the drums, I think that's cool because, you know, Butch Vig was a drummer. So I think I don't know that he did, but it makes sense that he might pay a little extra attention to the drum sound. And the drums on that song sound huge. They sound really good.
Lots of flams.
Yeah, yeah, lots of flams. That's right. Mm-hmm. It doesn't hurt that Dave Grohl is an amazing drummer. So.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, and Butch Vig, it was an amazing producer because he was hitting Pumpkins then and that and, you know, then doing Garbage and stuff on his own. So he was killing it at that point in time.
Yeah.
Okay, so my next one is another conglomeration. Sorry, just how this worked out. So I started thinking about, like, I was trying to go through periods in my life where I added pieces of music to what I love to listen to. Yep. And I came to the early 80s, and what they all had in common was John Hughes movies. And that's where you pick up OMD, The Smiths, New Order, Psychedelic Furs, Echo and the Bunnymen, Simple Minds, Spandau Ballet, like all these great groups just were all over these soundtracks.
Yep.
And so, you know, I fell in love with them. And then right on the heels of that, it's The Cure, you know. And so you can just kind of see that progression of what I was listening to and where I would eventually go and stay forever. So I give a lot of credit to those movies because they not only had those great songs, but the visuals with that and the story that was going on really made those, you felt those songs, which was so good. So, that's my number three.
I am a dyed-in-the-wool John Hughes fan. I love his stuff. I mean, stuff he wrote, directed, all of it. He's the tops of the 80s movies for me. And yeah, that's one of the things too. A lot of at the time, the kids that were in his movies, they would talk about him, like giving them mixtapes and throwing different bands at him and all this. Like, he had such an amazing ear for music.
Yeah. Yep, I agree 100%. All right, Mundy, you're up.
Okay, so continuing my evolution into the metalhead that you see before you. In 1991, Sepultura dropped their album Arise, and the first song that I ever heard from them was their video on Headbangers Ball, of course, for Dead Embryonic Cells. And this is one that I cannot overstate how much it like wormed its way in there and changed how my ear was made. I think it changed the structure of what was in my ears. Sepultura absolutely blew my mind. This song Like the vocals, the drums. To this day, Igor Cavalera is one of my absolute favorite metal drummers. He is hard to top for me. But yeah, Dead Embryonic Cells. I mean, you have that the breakdown in the middle that goes into. I mean, it's fast, it's crazy, it's frenetic. Then there's the breakdown, and it goes into this just slamming, chuggy riff, and Max's vocals. It just totally rewired how my brain listened to music.
Very good. And I assume that's Max's brother or cousin.
Yes, no, they're brothers. Max and brothers. Igor. Okay. Yeah.
Excellent. Okay.
Yeah, great choice.
They were an earworm, that's for sure.
Oh.
All right, number four.
Oh, this is me?
Yes.
So this wasn't a song, but this was an experience. Again, in college, my band was playing a Halloween party in Indianapolis, a basement party, and we played, and then after us was the band that's still around that area. I don't know if you know Legion. Do you know the death metal band Legion by chance?
No.
They've been around literally for 30 years. So they're based out of Indianapolis now, but gone through a few different singers or whatever. But I knew some death metal because I worked at a record shop at the time that we sold a lot of death metal records. It wasn't really my thing. I didn't listen to it that much. But then experiencing it live in a basement with about 30 people watching, and they didn't turn their volume down. So we were right in front of this band, you know, like 20 feet in front of the band, all of that bass just shaking me. And I was sold at that point, man. And then it was, you know, Morbid Angel and Grave, yep, and got into Death a little bit, and Brutal Truth. I was really into Gore Fest, you know, all that stuff, mostly because of that show, because I saw that show and then I just took a dive into it.
That's awesome. So I had a similar thing with Cannibal Corpse, because I was never a huge fan of theirs. I like the artwork, actually, because the artist that did their covers was an amazing comic book artist as well. Never a huge fan. And we actually saw them live, and I was like, to see that being played at your face, you're like, holy crap, this is amazing. It's so similar experience for me. And you mentioned Death. They're one of my absolute favorites. I wish Chuck Schuldiner was still with us. I can't imagine what he would be doing now. But yeah, good stuff.
Fantastic. Yep. All right. Are we at four?
Yep.
We are at four. Okay. So my number four is the Pumpkins. Obviously, it's one of my favorite bands. And when the first time that I heard I Am One, just totally blown away. The way Jimmy tunes his snare is crazy, and it's all over this record. It's so good. And then they layer their guitars so much, and it just sounds so good. And his voice just kind of rides that wave of those layered guitars. But it was a totally unique sound. They didn't sound like anybody else. They were coming out at the same time as the grunge movement. So for me, they really stood out in a good way. And so they've been one of my top two or three bands since that moment. And I was lucky enough, they were at Indiana University when I was there in school before they broke, playing a little club called Jake's, which was cool.
Wow, that's nice. Cool. Yeah.
So, but anyway, yeah, that's it for me, my number four.
Very cool.
Yeah, that was a great album, Gish. That was, I was very struck by that record myself. It went on autoplay for a long time for me. So
yeah, that was great. Siamese Dream is probably my favorite all-time record. It was like they took Gish and they just kind of fine-tuned it a little bit.
And so
that's probably my favorite. And then Jimmy is, I know you as a drummer, he is incredible. And he's got his own little jazz group, the Jimmy Chamberlain Complex.
Yeah.
Which is really good, where he gets to explore a little more, I think.
Yeah.
Very cool.
All right, Mundy, what you got?
So you've got this baby metalhead Mundy, kind of, you know, things are getting in and gestating and changing around.
Would you be toddler?
And then
that one?
No.
Toddlehead Mundy?
Not quite. I would say baby really more.
Yeah, okay.
But, So, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, comes this video that hits me in the face for Wish by Nine Inch Nails.
Mm. Mm.
Yep. Like, what is this? What is happening? What are these noises? What is that, a guitar? How do they get a guitar to sound like that? And why is this guy so mad? And so, yeah, I mean, that Wish just absolutely blew me away. And that started my deep dive into all things Trent Reznor and industrial music. And, you know, then comes Ministry, KMFDM, Stabbing Westward, on and on, Frontline Assembly, Front 242, on and on and on. So, yeah, that was, that kind of started me down the industrial path. And I still love it today.
All right. Yeah, I love that too. That might have been my no, that was right after Pretty Hate, right? Was that the one that was the,
it was 92. Yes.
Yeah.
Broken 92.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a copy of that. That was good.
Yeah, that's a great record too.
Yeah. There aren't a lot of Nine Inch Nails records that you wouldn't say were great. Ghost got a little bit tedious at times, yeah, because it was a lot of noise, yeah. The record after record, but there's still some good stuff in there if you wheedled it down. So
yeah,
nothing terrible ever. So good choice.
Is Broken the one, what's the first song on Broken? Do you know?
It's an intro called Pinion.
Okay.
And then Wish, I think, right?
Oh, okay. It's Wish. So Wish is the one that has the digital silence in it.
Yes.
It plays the guitar riff. And they insert that digital silence, which actually kind of hurts your ears, right? The first time you hear it, because you expect to hear like a buzz or something.
Right.
And now we're sort of used to it because people do it, but that was one of the first records that I ever heard that took advantage of digital recording and just went literal silence, you know, because we say silence, but it's not actually silence usually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that, it was like, that is jarring for some reason. I couldn't figure out why, you know?
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that, actually, because I was listening to it before we got on, and I'm like, I'm going to say something about that, and I completely forgot, so thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Is that the one with the Adam Ant remake?
On Broken, yes. Yeah.
Okay, I thought so. Which was wonderful, so.
Yep.
All right, your last one. And if you got any honorable mentions, you just kind of throw them out there and then hit your main one.
Okay. I've got probably a few honorable mentions. I had thought about talking about my first record, which was that belonged to me, which was that first Toto record that had Hold the Line on it. Because as a little guy, my dad had a bunch of records. My sister had her own music. My brother had his own music. And my tastes were basically all of their records combined, because I didn't own any of my own records. And I would hear Hold the Line on the radio. And that was the first record that I ever asked for. And that was mine. I didn't have to share it with my siblings. And they weren't even into it, which was also kind of cool. Because it was like my first, like, oh, this is only mine. Because nobody's even going to want to listen to it, because they don't like it, you know. So, but anyway, that's an honorable mention. I would say another experience, which again is probably this, I probably share this experience with a lot of people. Why? I know I do, but just by definition. But when I worked in the record shop, we would get these demos, and we had a demo of a few Rage Against the Machine songs. We didn't have the full album yet. You know, you'd get those punch outs from the distributors.
Yep.
And one of the guys in the shop would play Rage Against the Machine, and I liked it quite a bit. And then I went to that Lollapalooza that they opened.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know if you probably remember that at the beginning of that tour, they were kind of known, but they weren't a household name. And by the end of that tour, just off of the strength of their live performance, everybody knew who they were. And they were the opener for that. And they blew. I don't remember anything else about that concert, actually. I just remember them being so amazing. Like I was just a huge, after that, I was a fan, you know.
So. Awesome.
Very good.
They could have easily made my list too, but I only got so many spots.
We got to draw the line somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
So Kevin, the question was, when you were in DC, did you know the band Paper House?
I did not.
Did not. Okay. I will let him know. That's my DC friend. Oh, he, he said he did not see you, but he asked if you knew this particular band.
Oh yeah, I see you on my screen. I'm sorry that I wasn't aware, but you know, I don't get out much.
Well, it happens.
So it doesn't mean much.
All right. Well, I'll let him know. My honorable mentions were Jane's Addiction, because I got that right before I went away to college, and that was totally different than anything I had heard before, which mm-hmm. was really cool. Live, the band, the first time I heard Operation Spirit, which was incredible. Got to see them at a little teeny tiny, the Alumni Hall at Indiana University. They just stood on the floor playing as we all stood around them, and it was a really cool experience. And then recently, Mundy and I just kind of hooked up with this group. We didn't hook up with them. Sorry, we started covering them not too long ago. We did their album, but Sleep Token, talk about an earworm that it just gets in there and you don't know why you love it, man. But you love it. It's the strangest thing ever. So that would be my other honorable mention. And then my actual fifth choice is Slipknot. And it was not the first record, because I did not hear the first record. It was the second one when my eighth grade student, that we talked about music all the time. He was a hellion, but he liked me, so we got along very well. And he made a CD for me of Iowa. And I took it home, and the minute I heard those drums, I was sold. And then, of course, Corey Taylor's incredible. So from that moment on, I was a huge Slipknot fan, and that was the moment, people equals shit, when that when those drums hit in. I was just like, okay, mind blown, I'm good. So from there on, and so I'm ever thankful for that young eighth grader for changing my musical taste.
Yeah, I also, as you know, I also came to them later. When they first came on, I was like, I don't really care. But I mean, I kind of did that with Korn too. Like, our friend Paul tried to get me into them forever, and I actually that was the band that I saw them live, and I was like, holy crap. So
yeah,
that's cool. Some good choices. Kevin, did you do your fifth choice, or did you just do your honorable mentions?
I did my fifth.
I just wanted to make sure.
Rage was my.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Didn't want to skip you there.
Nope. Not at all.
All right. So my honorable mentions, I just have two that I want to talk about. One was from 1987. So at this time, so I was probably fifth grade or so, I think fifth grade. And, I listened to, like, the Beastie Boys' first album was out at that time. And, like, I had been listening to hip-hop was really kind of catching on, like, mid-80s. But, I mean, I was listening to Beastie Boys. That album was kind of funny, and it was cool. I loved at that time. I loved the Fat Boys. Hilarious. And just stuff like that. A little bit of, like, Curtis Blow. A little, you know, just different stuff. And so for my 11th birthday, I got the LL Cool J album, Bigger and Deffer. The first song on that is I'm Bad. And holy crap, I will never forget listening to that song. And I was like, it's one of those things where, like, wait, you can do that? And because it wasn't just funny and silly, like, it wasn't, it almost sounded like it wasn't meant to be entertaining. It was like, I am awesome. This is why I'm awesome. You can't touch me. I'm bad, you know? So I was like, whoa, this is different. So that kind of changed my worldview on that a little bit. And then to totally switch gears, my other honorable mention is Dead Can Dance. Hmm. So they're from their 1993 album, which I think was that Toward the Within or something like that. There's a song on there called The Ubiquitous Mr. Lovegrove. I think it's the second song on the album. And wow, man, it just kind of, I don't even know what to call them. I don't know if you would call them world music. Like,
I think so.
Tribal music, like, it just kind of opened, you know, expanded my horizons to just I mean, that album, I mean, I could just sit with headphones on in a dark room and just, you know, dissect it and listen. And like every time you listen to it, you would catch another little thing in the background. You're like, whoa, this is amazing. It's just so layered and beautiful. And the two vocalists are both amazing in their own way. Dead Can Dance just blew me away. Mm-hmm. So kind of cool. Yep. And so my number five was, so I'm this huge metalhead. I've gotten into industrial. I'm all about being, you know, being hard and angry and pissed off all the time. And then Tori Amos, man, just blew that all up. And I saw the video for Crucify and I was like, holy crap. Like, why do I love this? Why do I love this? And man, she just absolutely blew me away. And after her second album came out, I saw her live twice in like 94, 95. And
nice.
Oof, man, that's an experience I will always have with me. To this day, her first two albums are, I mean, just goosebumps. I love her voice. I love her songwriting, and I would be honored to be a cornflake girl with her. Thank you.
I think that's a pejorative term, actually. But yeah. Well, in the song, anyway.
That's true.
That's
but,
okay.
Yeah. So Tori Amos, man, just blew my mind.
I can't believe I forgot that one. I should amend one of mine because, yeah, Little Earthquakes, man, that was huge. Man, that song Winter on there is just gets me every time, man.
Absolutely.
Great. I'm sure if we sat long enough, we could all come up with five or six.
I'm sure. Absolutely.
Oh, and I mean, Tori Amos, dude, I was all in. Like, I was buying the CDs and I was buying like every single because every single had like a live song, a mm-hmm. cover, a remix. Like, I mean, I was buying it all. I have so many Tori Amos CD singles from back then.
Awesome.
All right. Excellent job.
I actually have, if you can see it, I don't know, but right here, this is a book called Comic Book Tattoo. And it is like a comic book adaptations of Tori Amos songs.
Oh, wow.
I have it as well right back there. It's a huge book.
It's huge. Yeah. Yes. It's actually, it's so big, it's hard to read.
It is. It's one of those that you got to sit at a table.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it is cool. All right. Kevin, well played.
Thank you.
You did a nice job.
Same to you.
Great. Yeah, you guys did great. You sounded like you didn't, I don't know. We sounded like we weren't on the same page when we were talking about it, but I think everybody did great.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
You guys took it ways that I didn't even think of, but it totally worked. So good job. It was
all musical. All right. Well, that brings us to the actual task of the program, which was to review the latest record from Judas Priest called Invincible Shield.
That wasn't our whole show.
It would seem like it. That's more than enough for most shows, but not on this quality program.
That's right.
That was all fluff. Now it's the real meat and potatoes. But we're going to sell you a little short tonight because normally we do track by track, but it is 14 tracks. This is a beast.
That's a lot.
So we're going to hit our usual. We do our opening track. Is it a good one? Closing track. Is it a good one? We're going to pick out some highlights and then decide if this overall was a quality record.
So I touched on something last week and I wanted to clarify that because I think I said that Judas Priest was like the first band to release albums 50 years apart. Not quite. They're the first heavy metal band to release albums 50 years apart. So
I got you.
Little clarification, minor detail, but still, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
And to still be able to sing that well 50 years on is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
So, like the record or not, I think you have to give kudos to Rob because he can still belt it. I mean, he's got that voice.
Amazing. He sounds so good still. Just amazing.
Yeah. Clean. Yeah. Very versatile, too. I felt like there was you know, you got your traditional old 70s and 80s big time metal rock, but then there were some other moments where it was a little deeper and grittier and just beautiful. So very diverse, I think. So okay, well let's look at the opening track. Kevin, what do you think? It was a good opener?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought so. I'll tell you, I went into this, I don't know that I've listened to any Judas Priest since probably Screaming for Vengeance, which I loved. You know, I just have not been into Judas Priest for a really long time. And I went into it thinking like, oh, here we go. Some more of these guys trying to relive the glory days. So I had not heard them with their current drummer, which I had to do some research. And you already know he's the drummer from Racer X, right? And so I wasn't expecting all the double bass work and all of that. Mm-hmm. And then when that started, I thought, am I going to like it? But man, and I will say, I expected some cheese, which you totally get from their lyrics and all that. But the other night I was sitting, I was like, okay, I've got to listen to this record. I put it on. I was just going to listen to a couple of songs because I was doing something else. And it was late at night, and I ended up listening to the entire record because it was so much fun. And I think those first, you know, that first song is a great opener. Sorry to make the answer so long, but that first song is a great opener. And the way they hit you with those first three songs that are of similar energy is just like you would do in a live set, you know, just like brutal, one after the other. I think that's a great opener.
I agree. Scott Travis is the drummer, and fun fact about him, I guess, fun for me anyway, is when soon after he came in, actually, was when Rob left Judas Priest for a while, and Scott actually went with him to his next band, which was just called Fight, which was fantastic. They put out a couple of albums, and I love those. I still listen to those. And then I think when Rob, I think Scott went back pretty quick after that, way before Rob came back. But same with me. Like, I haven't listened to Priest really much since Painkiller was mine, because that hit when I was like 14, 15 years old, and it's amazing. But that's, I think, around the time that Scott came in. Well, he came in 89, it says. So, so when Rob left, like, I was not interested in Judas Priest. I didn't care about Ripper Owens. Whatever. I still haven't really listened to any of that stuff. So Scott, he's a great drummer. I've loved him for a long time. But yes, Panic Attack, I absolutely love the keys in the intro. So great. And then the guitar just starts playing the same, you know, same right along with it. And it's so cool. And it just, you know, solid riffs, fantastic solos, which you expect from Judas Priest. The drums, Scott's drums sound amazing. And man, just if you had any doubts about Rob Halford, it's the dude hasn't lost a step, man. It's insane.
Yeah. So my comment was exactly what you said, Mundy. It was that electronic start where they seamlessly turned into a guitar, which was just beautiful. And then it's just a hard driving. It's not like I would call it a radio friendly song, but it's an opening, like you said, a concert song. That's just boom. Everybody can get behind this and sing and rock and enjoy it. It was a fantastic album opener. And again, another poignant topic about reacting to something on the internet, you know, which is a cool concept. There's a lot of songs on here that have some cool lyrical content other than just great music. So what were some standouts for you guys?
Go ahead, Kevin. You got some?
I'm scrolling through. I liked Panic Attack a lot. I liked the first three. As I said, I liked the first three. quite a bit. And then I liked Crown of Horns. I thought was a really interesting song. I kind of liked that one lyrically. It was like, it kind of cracks me up being, you know, being also a fan of especially classic country. Some of the twists on phrases kind of crack me up because they do that in country all the time. I tend to make these weird connections that, you know, aren't necessarily there. I don't know. They're kind of there, but they're not there for the same reason. You understand what I mean, though. I liked the standout on the record. Not standout. It was a, I guess, an outlier on the record is the closer, The Lodger, which I know we'll talk about that as a closer pretty soon, but I have thoughts, separate thoughts about that. But I really liked that song. I love the vibe of it. It seems really, to me, I thought, well, this is really different for Judas Priest, you know? It's almost an Alice Cooper song in a way, like a old Alice Cooper song.
It's creepy.
It's creepy.
Yeah.
I mean, if you listen to the story, you know, they're not going to win a Pulitzer Prize for lyrics, but I loved all the lyrics until he over explains the song. You know, he said something about that the girl was his sister. It was like he couldn't finish the story, so he just had to give you the ending. It's like, spoiler, this is what it is. I was like, okay, thanks for that. But it doesn't take too much away from the song because I expect a little bit of cheesiness out of this, you know, this genre of metal, kind of. But yeah, I thought there were some songs, you know, overall, you guys will probably say this too, I'm guessing, that it was a bit long. The record was a bit long. I think it could have been three or four songs shorter and it would have been amazing. You know, other than that, you know, those are, I guess, probably the big standouts to me. I like Devil in Disguise a lot too. I thought that was a cool song. I actually like the lyrics in Devil in Disguise. I thought that was pretty cool too.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty much with you there on the first three songs, Serpent and the King. This is, you know, I mentioned Painkiller. The song Painkiller is probably my favorite Priest song. So when he's singing, like he sings on Serpent and the King, that's my favorite Rob Halford. When he's kind of up there high and screamy, and yeah. I love it. And I mean, he can still do it. It's so crazy. I love it. Good for him. But Serpent and the King, yeah, it's fast and mean. It's just a lot of fun. Invincible Shield, I don't know. There's something about that song where I feel like I shouldn't love it as much as I do.
Yeah, absolutely.
But damn it, it's so good. It's so good. Catchy. The harmony vocals, like Halford does this thing sometimes where he sings it in his lower register and then he'll double it way up here. And man, it works so good. And they do that on the Invincible Shield. It's amazing. The double bass on Invincible Shield is just relentless. Really good grooves and some fun harmony guitar stuff in that song. Yeah, you mentioned Devil in Disguise. That was, you know, kind of a slower tempo stomper a little bit. Let's see. The Crown of Horns, like, I don't love that song, but it kind of makes sense as a single. It's kind of more, a little more accessible, I guess. The music on As God Is My Witness, I think, is out of this world. It's so good. Trial by Fire, the vocal melody is really cool. Yeah, but there's a lot of good, I keep mentioning Rob, there's a lot of great solo work on this album, even if it's just little stings here and there. But, you know, Glenn Tipton, of course, he's a legend. He's been with Priest forever, so for 50 years, I think. So, and then Richie Faulkner is the young buck. he's not young, but he's a lot younger than the rest of the guys. So, but those two on guitar are all over this record, and it's just pretty outstanding.
Yep. So. Facebook user, I'd have to go to Facebook real fast and look, but they said it's nice to see you on the show. Save me the time of going to look and post your name because I don't see it here. So one song that you guys didn't mention that I really liked was Giants in the Sky about Ronnie James Dio and Lemmy. The thing I really liked, it had a really cool groove and the chorus was good and everything, but I liked it because his voice was deeper on this one. And it was, after hearing a lot of the other, it was nice to get into that low groove. And then another thing that was kind of interesting, as I'm going through these songs, I'm like, we got a song with the devil battling God. We've got Crowns of Horns, like a play on Crown of Thorns. I'm like, this is the group that used to be protested because they were all devil and everything. And so I'm like, what's going on? So I looked it up and Robert Halford has been praying every day for 28 years and it's kept him sober. You know, and I'm like, okay, this makes a little more sense now. Because, it was a little interesting. And I would agree with you guys on the first three songs. And Jeremy, when you said the double bass on Invincible Shield, that was my big comment, was those drums are just killer and relentless on that song. So good. Those are basically my highlights. I think Giants in the Sky might have been my favorite one behind Panic Attack.
I love the vocals on Giants in the Sky. That was really my one note on that song. I mean, I like the idea that he's singing about his friends, you know, that have left this earth and all. That's very cool. Yeah. But I didn't love the song, but his vocals were outstanding on that song.
Yeah. I think I'm going to have a very differing view on the last song than you guys.
Okay. So, well, we can get into that. So,
you ready to talk about it?
Yeah, Kevin, you know, he already told us what he thinks.
I didn't tell you what I think. Oh, okay. I didn't tell you about what I think of it as a closer, but
yeah. Oh, that's okay. Yeah. I mean, but building on what you said, so I was reading the lyrics as I was listening to this earlier today, and I was like, "Huh, okay." So it's kind of different from most of the songs. I mean, it is a story song, which is cool. I dig that. And it, you know, you touched on it. It has like kind of this creepy feel, like the, just something about it feels, whatever they're doing with the music, it just kind of feels creepy and weird, but I love that. It gives it kind of almost like a horror movie soundtrack feel, which, you know, along with the lyrical content, makes total sense. And I don't know. I think it's a decent closer. This is one of those things where the record kind of goes like, I mean, the first three songs just blast you in the face. And then we kind of go up and down a little bit. And then, yeah, I think the Lodger is different enough that it's almost like, where else do you put it?
In the trash.
Well, I disagree with that, sir. Let me answer that question for you. I think you switched that with Giants in the Sky. I think for me, Giants in the Sky is the most obvious closer to this record.
Okay.
Because it speaks to what it's actually speaking to, and it speaks on a higher level. Here you have these guys who have been doing this for 50 years.
Yep.
That song could just as easily be about them. And it's this anthem that it's like a tribute to this type of metal. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like put that song last and leave people with that impression of the record. Like, you know, that would be so satisfying to me. Put the Lodger up there in the middle. The problem with the Lodger being last is that it feels like here's this song that's really weird compared to the rest of the record. We'll just tag it onto the end because nobody listened to it. Either put it someplace else or just don't put it on the record. To me, it made it look like it was a throwaway or something, and it kind of took away from the record for me. I just think you switch those two songs and you've got a banger.
Well, before Steve craps on it, I don't think it's a throwaway. I totally agree with you. I can totally see switching it with Giants in the Sky, and everything you said about that song makes total sense.
Did you guys think it was weird that it started with a guitar solo? That's almost what it felt like. It felt like we almost entered into the middle of the song.
Oh, that happens all the time.
I don't know. I don't know. It just didn't feel like that to me. I felt like the chorus, the harmony was a little off. I didn't feel like that was very cohesive. But what really stood out is I could just imagine a character in a musical like Gaston or somebody stepping up and singing this song. And okay. It just felt so weird. Like it was like a camp heavy metal musical.
Well, I came across, you know, to me. Kevin mentioned Alice Cooper. I think
very theatrical.
I understand that. Yes, it's theatrical. Alice has said over and over through the years that Alice on stage is a character. That is a character that he puts on when he goes on stage to sing this stuff. And I mean, yeah, I get that. And that's kind of looking at it through that lens. I get that. Like this song makes sense that way.
But there's 13 other songs that are not this. That's where it feels so weird, like a tack on.
Yep. I agree with that.
But you know, you could see something like that on like a Blizzard of Oz too, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's got that kind of vibe to it that like maybe part of, not all of Revelation Mother Earth has, but like some of that sort of a.
I would say more, if we're going to talk Ozzy, I would say Diary of a Madman.
Oh yeah. 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 That, yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
That
yeah.
song, amazing as it is very different from the rest of the album.
There you go.
Well, suffice to say, I didn't think it was a good album closer.
Here's why you were wrong.
I like Kevin's idea much better of putting Giants in the, especially since that was probably my favorite song. Let's end the record with my two favorites. Start with one, finish with the other, and we got a beauty. We got a awesome sandwich. So, all right. Yeah. Well, Kevin, how would you rate the record overall on a scale of 1 to 5? And will you listen again?
I would say. Probably, I'm going to give it a 3 3/4 because of some of the songs that, it's close to 4, but I'm going to go with 3 3/4. Mm-hmm. Because of how much fun I had listening to it, and I've listened to the whole record all the way through twice. I enjoyed it both times. Some of the songs the second time, I didn't enjoy them as much. Those are the ones I would take off. So I can see me going back and listening to parts of the record and then skipping over a few of the songs.
Yeah. All right. I would go with a 2.5, and it's because I really like a couple of the songs, but there are just too many songs. When we talk about that glut in the middle, it was a pretty big section for me where the songs were okay. But I would never go back and listen to them again. So that's why I would mark it down. And then the last song. So I'm going to go with a 2.5.
So I would say 3.5 out of 5. And a lot of that rests on the shoulders of Rob Halford because I love him and he's amazing.
He's great.
I agree with the length. You could easily take out 2, 3, 4 songs on this and it would be that much better for it. But the more I listen to this, I think, you know, well, of course, and doing it for the show, sitting down to take notes and all that, you get more critical. But yeah, the first couple of times through, I just was smiling. I'm like, holy crap, this is so good. I did not expect it to enjoy it as much as I did. I did not expect it to be this good. And there were times when there's a couple of touches in this album that feel maybe dated is the only word I can think of, but it also doesn't feel that way. If that, like, it's kind of both at the same time. So I had a lot of fun with it, and you know, it's not the best record I've ever heard, but yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I will probably. It kind of makes me want to listen to their last few records and be like, "What have I been missing?" So
sometimes dated kind of turns into nostalgia, though, as well, and so you kind of go back and remember some of that older and think, "Yeah, that was great."
I don't think I felt that. It's really just like, I'm like, that kind of sounds like Old Priest, but then like kind of modernized, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Made me want to go back and listen to Iron Maiden.
Oh, that's so funny you said that. Same for me. Like there were some moments that I was like, oh yeah, Iron Maiden, dude. I need to go listen to them again. That's funny.
And I did go back. So remember we were talking last week and I didn't realize that they had done Diamonds and Rust.
Yes.
And which that's one of my daughter's favorite songs. She loves. Mm-hmm. So I went back and listened to it. His voice is beautiful on that song. I can't understand why they chose a galloping sound for the music on it. Like, okay. it's just an interesting choice for that mm-hmm. song. And it's not terrible by any means, but it sounds like a gallop. And they're singing Diamonds and Rust. If you haven't listened or recently or ever, go back and check it out again. Very interesting song choice for them.
Did you listen to Green Manalishi?
I did not.
You should.
Okay. I'll write that down. Okay.
We'll wait.
I'm back. You want me to go listen right now? Okay. Hold on. I'll be back in 6 minutes. All right. Well, Kevin, thanks for coming on the show. That was fun.
Thanks for having me. Love it. Always a pleasure.
So we'll have to have you back when Jack the Radio comes out.
We would love to be here. And yes. I know George is itching to come on and talk about the new songs. So.
I tried to get him on a while ago, and he was like, oh, I can't do it then. I got this and this. And I'm like, all right, dude, anytime you want. So.
Well, he'll be in record promotion mode at some point. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Will there be a comic book with this one?
Have to put us on the schedule.
I believe there is a comic book coming out with it. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that or not, but I'm going to say it.
Don't worry. It'll just be the three of us knowing that. Everybody will have tuned out by now.
And whoever the Facebook user is. Probably George.
Oh, I can go find out. Dang it. All right. I'm going to go find out real fast. You guys just keep talking.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, you guys have Jack the Radio. Did I see? So, you have a new song coming soon, right? Like real soon.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd have to look at the week.
April? I think it said
April. Probably April. I think the final decision was something like a song every 2 weeks leading up to the record.
Okay.
I think it's what's happening. Yeah. So there's been discussion back and forth. I have a timeline someplace that I just don't remember things. Things right change on. And all that, you know, depending on time and being able to, you know, get the production done on everything and, you know, people's schedules and all that. But now that it's all getting wrapped up. And then we added, there was a song that was going to be an acoustic or more of a stripped down song. And then at the last minute, we decided to do a full band version of it, so I had to go track drums for that a few weeks ago, and so we're scrambling to get, not scrambling, but we're putting some time into getting that one going. So
very cool.
I'm excited to hear the double bass on this new record. George was talking about it, so I'm stoked.
How to get fired from Jack the Radio in one easy step.
The Facebook user was my daughter.
Oh, yeah.
So she's our number one fan.
Well, thank you.
She only says that so I don't kick her out of the house. Just kidding. Okay. Well, gentlemen, I think that wraps up this episode. And I don't know that we'll be back next week because that is my spring break from school. Okay. So we might be out of town. So stay tuned for the next show. We'll post it and then share that around on social media so you guys know when it's going to be.
We're recording this on St. Patty's Day, so I had to wear my Flogging Molly shirt.
Attaboy.
Very good.
And he's got a Luck shirt on, so that counts, right? It's all about Luck of the Irish.
Now, this is Dawes.
All right, fine.
I get it, but it's red. I don't know. Whatever.
All right. Well, until next week, we're going to leave you with Juno 19. See you next time, everybody.